Going online without ExpressVPN is like not closing the door when you use the bathroom. Even if you think you have nothing to hide, why give random creeps a chance to invade your privacy? Without a VPN, your internet provider, mobile network, and admin of your Wi-Fi, like your boss or parents, can still see every website you visit. To avoid that, ExpressVPN reroutes 100% of your traffic through secure encrypted servers. ExpressVPN is the best VPN, rated number one by top reviewers like The Verge. It's really easy to use and works on all devices. We can't take our online privacy and safety for granted. I feel very unprotected without my ExpressVPN. Without it, I can't search my facts in peace. Protect your online privacy today by visiting expressvpn.com/beamazed. That's expressvpn.com/beamazed, and you can get an extra 3 months free. expressvpn.com/beamazed.
Life can always use more Cedar Point. And right now, you can get more Cedar Point for less with the Fun Day Bundle for just $74.99. Each bundle gets you admission, parking, and all-day dining for one low price. That means more coasters like Steel Vengeance and more nostalgic fun in the boardwalk area. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Whether the jaw-dropping circumstances are Final Destination-style car accidents, 133 days stranded at sea, or 30 minutes on the seabed without any oxygen, some incredibly lucky people had their bacon saved when the odds were truly stacked against them. I'm warning you, this podcast is going to be a real nail-biter. If you're looking for danger, camping out next to an active volcano is one surefire way to find it. Back in 1980, Danny J. Balk and his friend Brian Thomas were camping in a meadow near Mount St. Helens when they were jolted awake at 8:32 a.m. by an intense rumbling sound. When the pair looked out of the tent window, their worst fears were confirmed. An eruption was heading their way. As they dashed for the tree line, Balk was hit by a blast of heat and a shower of ash, mud, and ice that caked him in grit and pushed him flat to the ground. In those few seconds, his entire body went from frozen to baked as the extreme heat melted the skin off his fingers. When he came to, Balk called out for Thomas and managed to wade into the river to soothe his burns. As he resumed his search and began scrambling through fallen trees, he suddenly felt a hand on his left shoulder that took him by surprise. When he looked down, he was shocked to see Thomas under a tangle of tree limbs. Thomas had a broken hip, but Balk was able to pull him up just before the cloud of ash plunged the sky into darkness so that neither man could see just inches in front of them. Miraculously, two other campers in the group, Bruce Nelson and Sue Ruff, who had been toasting marshmallows at the time of the explosion, saw the two men and helped carry Thomas to the ruins of an old cabin where they built a makeshift lean-to. Balk then set off with the others to find rescue, and they were eventually spotted at about 6 p.m. by two helicopters. But he didn't forget about Thomas. Balk used a map to show them where his friend was, and the men were airlifted to hospital to recover. The worst part is that Balk had wanted to go to the beach that day, but was convinced by Thomas to go camping at the volcano. Just goes to show you should never give in to peer pressure, guys. Next up, the year was 1963, and then 21-year-old Helen Klaven was on the hunt for adventure. She'd left her hometown of Brooklyn to head for Hong Kong or India, but she had to reach San Francisco first, which meant getting a flight to Whitehorse, the capital of the Yukon Territory. Klaven was on a budget, so she decided to fly with an amateur pilot, 41-year-old Ralph Flores, in his single-engine plane instead. What could go wrong? The pair set off on February 4th, 1963, but not long into the journey, Flores ran into a snowstorm and tried to take the plane above the clouds. When he descended, he hoped to follow landmarks or the path of the Alaska Highway to reach Fort St. John, but instead he was met with mountains and trees. Before Klaven could understand what was going on, the plane crashed into a desolate stretch of wilderness near the Yukon-British Columbia border. The pair miraculously survived. Claiborne suffered a broken left arm and Flores a fractured jaw, but they were now stranded in sub-zero temperatures as low as negative 42 degrees Celsius. The little food they had on board, a few cans of sardines, tuna, fruit salad, a box of saltine crackers, and some vitamin pills, were rationed within 10 days, forcing them to make soup from melted snow. The pair were able to create a shelter from a piece of tarpaulin and cushions from the plane, while they also fashioned a blanket from the plane's carpet and used gasoline from the fuel tank to light a campfire that would keep them warm at night. Eventually, Flores found a frozen pond and etched an enormous SOS sign with an arrow pointing to their campsite. On day 49 of their ordeal, Charles Hamilton, a pilot flying supplies to a nearby trapper's cabin, spotted the SOS and rescued them. Claiborne passed away in 28, age 76, but the story of her amazing survival will continue to live on in her 1964 book, Hey, I'm Alive. And if you have a fear of flying, you might want to cover your ears for this one. It turns out that it's not only on single-engine flights with amateur pilots that things can go massively wrong. On Christmas Eve 1971, then 17-year-old Julianne Kopke was flying over the Peruvian rainforest on Lanza Flight 508 with her mother when things took a turn for the worst. The plane flew into a dark, violent storm which shook the entire cabin before all the lights cut out and the aircraft went into a total nosedive. Kopke closed her eyes tightly and covered her ears to drown out the noise of passengers screaming and the deep roar of the engines, but suddenly it all stopped. The plane had disintegrated about 2 miles above the ground and she was now in a free fall, still strapped to her seat. As the canopy of the jungle spun towards her, Kopke blacked out just before impact. The next day, she awoke in the rainforest and realized she was totally alone. She was the sole survivor of the crash, but her ordeal still wasn't over yet. To begin with, she was lost in the middle of the rainforest. She had just fallen from the skies, but her survival problems were just getting started. She had a broken collarbone and some deep cuts on her legs, but Kopke was able to walk until she found a stream to follow. After being alone in the wilderness for 10 days, Kopke found a small path to a hut with a palm roof. Nearby was an outboard motor from a large boat and a liter of gasoline, which she used to treat a maggot-infested wound on her right arm. After spending the night there, Kopke was awoken to the voices of men outside who initially thought she was a water goddess from local legend. After explaining her ordeal in Spanish, the men treated her wounds and took her back to civilization where she was reunited with her father. Kopke told her amazing story in the 2000 documentary Wings of Hope by director Werner Herzog, who coincidentally had a seat booked on that very flight before canceling last minute. But if you just decided you'll never fly again and you'll get on a boat instead, here's another story that might make you think twice. When Chinese native Poon Lim took a job as a steward on a British ship named the SS Bin Lomond, which was traveling from Cape Town to Suriname during World War II, he probably never imagined that it'd earn him a world record for the longest time spent adrift at sea. In 1942, a German U-boat came across the SS Bin Lomond 750 miles east of the Amazon, and a pair of torpedoes sank it in 2 minutes flat. It happened so fast that most of the crew on board sunk with the vessel. Of the total 55 crew members, Poon Lim would be the only survivor. As the ship sank, Lim managed to grab a life jacket and jump overboard just before the boilers exploded. After drifting aimlessly for about 2 hours, Lim spotted an 8x8-foot raft and hauled himself onto it. The raft contained some meager survival rations, including tins of dried biscuits, 40 liters of water, a bag of sugar cubes, chocolate, an electric torch, and a handful of flares. But the food didn't last long, and Lim had to improvise by taking the wire from the flashlight and making a fish hook, which he fixed to the end of some hemp rope as a makeshift line. He also fashioned a knife out of the biscuit tin, which he used to kill seabirds, and then used the birds' meat to catch sharks. As if that wasn't badass enough, Lim did all this without ever learning how to swim properly. In fact, he tied himself to the raft with rope to make sure he never fell off. Bunlem spent a grand total of 133 days at sea until three Brazilian fishermen spotted his raft on the 5th of April 1943 and rescued him. He'd lost nearly 20 pounds in weight, but was crucially alive. When Bunlem was asked what he thought of his world record, he simply said, "I hope no one will have to break it." Imagine going through an ordeal like that and still having a sense of humor about it. Nice one, Bunlem. And here's another aquatic ordeal. On January 27, 1971, the Robertson family from the village of Mirbrook in Staffordshire, UK, set off from Falmouth, Cornwall on a voyage to parts unknown. Retired merchant naval officer Dougal Robertson had purchased a 43-foot wooden schooner called Lucette, which would be perfect for the educational adventure he had planned for with his wife, Len, 18-year-old son Douglas, 17-year-old daughter Anne, and twin sons Neil and Sandy, both 9 years old. And over the next year and a half, the family sailed across the Atlantic, stopping at various Caribbean ports and taking in amazing sights all over the world. But on the 15th of June, 1972, the family encountered a pod of killer whales near the Galapagos Islands, which launched an attack, damaging the boat beyond repair. The family, plus a student hitchhiker they'd picked up named Robin Williams, managed to scramble on board an inflatable lifeboat and dinghy. Once stranded, the group got by for 6 days on a few rations like biscuits, dried bread, onions, and fruits, but eventually resorted to hunting turtles to eat and collecting rainwater to drink. After 16 days, the inflatable raft became unusable, so the six people crammed onto the 10-foot-long dinghy called the Edna-Mare, taking it in turns to sit in the dry part of the boat. Finally, on the 23rd of July, 1972, 38 days into their trip on the Edna-Mare, they were picked up after a Japanese fishing trawler named the Tokomaru II spotted their distress fire. Next time you fancy some family bonding time, just stick to Scrabble. Next up, in 1998, Danny Pinar was a research student studying the habits of white rhinos in the wild in the Fobini tributary in South Africa. But this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity almost ended in tragedy. On one Thursday afternoon that January, Pinar decided to head out on a tracking exhibition without telling his campmates where he was going. Great idea, Pinar. As he waded through the waters of a small stream, he noticed something long and brown slithering in the nearby reeds. The next thing he knew, he felt a burning sensation on one side of his leg just under the knee. After looking down and finding four bluish-purple holes and a drop of blood, his worst suspicions were confirmed. He'd just been bitten by a black mamba snake. Black mamba venom is notoriously fast-acting as it shuts down the nervous system and paralyzes victims, and without anti-venom, its fatality rate is 100%. Pinar knew now that his only chance of survival was to make it back to his car and attempt the long trek back to the main town. Despite tying a tourniquet around his leg, the venom was already taking over his body as tunnel vision set in and his heartbeat sped up. After feverishly making his way back through the wilderness, Pinar reached his car and drove over 100 miles per hour down the road until he saw another car and forced them to stop. By the time they reached the hospital in Nelspruit, over 2 hours after he was bitten, Pinar could no longer swallow or speak as paralysis set in. After several days on a ventilator, though, Pinar was released with nothing but bite marks and one awesome story to tell. Animal attacks are no laughing matter, and if there's one creature you don't want to face off against, it's a 400-pound polar bear. Just ask Kutu Shaw. In September 2003, 46-year-old Shaw was working as a guide on a hunting trip in Kimmeroot, Canada, when things took a grisly turn. In the early hours of the morning, Shaw and the captain of the Mayakalik Hunters and Trappers organization awoke to find that the ceiling of their tent had been shredded as they slept. At first, it looked like the tent had been filled with snow, but as their bleary eyes adjusted, they realized it wasn't snow. It was the white fur of the perpetrator, which was now looming over the men. Now, if you know your bears, you must have heard the phrase, "If it's brown, lay down. If it's black, fight back. If it's white, good night." The captain immediately started running, and after failing to find a knife in the tent, Shaw joined him. But the fearsome polar bear was hot on their heels. Shaw was about 4 paces behind the captain, but then the unthinkable happened. He tripped on a small rock, and before he knew it, the 400-pound beast came down on top of him. The polar bear dragged Shaw towards the ocean, then gouged its claws into his back and sunk its ginormous teeth into his head. Just when it looked like it was game over for Shaw, the group's cook grabbed a gun that belonged to one of the American sport hunters and shot the bear twice, killing the animal. Amazingly, Shaw never lost consciousness. When they finally reached the ER, 3 handfuls of sand were removed from the blood-clotted area around his skull, which may have saved his life by slowing down the bleeding. After 13 hours of intensive surgery, Shaw walked free with a new nickname in Kimmerut, the Polar Bear Man. Being a guide in a hunting trip like Mr. Shaw certainly has its risks, but if you had to think about safe professions, saturation diver would probably be at the bottom of that list. And for good reason. In September 2012, Edinburgh-born saturation diver Chris Lemons was working in the North Sea diving from his ship, the Bibby Topaz, in a diving bell to repair oil rig structures. In case you didn't know, a diving bell is a tiny submarine-like structure, more akin to a chamber used to transport divers from the surface to depths and back into open water so they can carry out their work. For claustrophobic me, it gives me heart palpitations just thinking about it. One fateful day, Chris was lowered 91 meters in a diving bell alongside colleagues Dave Usa and Duncan Alcock to fix a pipe on the seabed at the Huntington oil field east of Peterhead in Aberdeenshire. But this was almost one trip he didn't return from. During the repair, Chris heard an alarm sounding in dive control, which meant getting out of the structure and back to the diving bell as quickly as possible. What the men didn't know was that their ship was moving away thanks to a failure in the computer which kept it in position. Then, disaster struck. Lemons' umbilical cord became snagged on part of the metal structure. This not only tethers divers back to the diving bell and the ship, but also provides them with breathing gas, hot water to keep the suits warm, as well as light and electricity. With the 8,000-ton boat pulling in the opposite direction and Lemons basically acting as a human anchor, there was only one outcome. The umbilical cable snapped, plunging him 100 meters down towards the seabed. Without it, Chris only had about 5 minutes of emergency gas stored in a set of normal diving cylinders on his back. He managed to find the structure they'd been working on and climbed on top of it, but the diving bell wasn't there, and he'd already used up about 2 to 3 minutes of gas. The clock was ticking, and Chris accepted his fate and blacked out. His colleagues put in a superhuman effort to locate him, but they were expecting to find a dead body, which is exactly what they thought when they found Chris laying on the floor of the rig. But after being hauled onto the diving bell and given 2 breaths, Lemon sputtered to life, 35 minutes after he had turned on his emergency supply of air. With nothing to breathe for that long, Chris could have easily suffered brain damage, but the gas they breathe has a high concentration of oxygen, which saturated his tissues and cells to allow him to survive. In just 3 weeks, this extremely lucky guy was even back working with his team again. Maybe it's time he reconsider his profession. I'm sure there are transferable skills. Maybe like becoming a diving instructor in the Bahamas instead, huh? Now, if you're anything like me, you see the bathroom as a temple and one of the safest places to be. After all, popping to the toilet to drop off some timber probably isn't on the top of your list of potentially life-threatening situations, but it can never be too safe. Just ask Coolidge Winsett. Winsett is a 75-year-old retired janitor and World War II veteran who lives in the very same home he grew up in Southwest Virginia. The problem is the property hadn't changed much over the years and there was no indoor bathroom, just a rickety old outhouse Winsett had built himself back in 1950. That didn't bother old Winsett. He'd been using it for years and he didn't think twice about paying it a visit one hot afternoon in August 2000. But while Winsett sat minding his own business, literally, the rotting floorboards below finally gave way, dumping the retired veteran into the filthy pit below. If you've ever watched Slumdog Millionaire, you might remember that scene when Jamal falls into a sewer. Oh, what a nightmare. Luckily for Winsett, he was able to stay afloat after landing on the remains of the floorboards, which acted like a makeshift raft. Unfortunately, Winsett had already been partially paralyzed by a stroke and was missing part of one leg, leaving him well and truly stuck. As time ticked by, the 17-year-old mailman, the only regular visitor to Winsett's property, noticed that the mail had started piling up, so he decided to investigate. Luckily, he discovered Winsett after following his weakened cries, and the old man was rescued by the fire department after 3 whole days in the pit. Now that's one seriously crappy ordeal. Now, moving on to a very sensitive topic. The morning of September the 11th, 2001, started like any other Tuesday morning for Janelle Guzman McMillan. She arrived promptly at her office on the 64th floor of the World Trade Center's North Tower, as usual. But this day would turn out to be anything but ordinary. Less than an hour into Janelle's day working as a secretary for the company Port Authority, the North Tower was suddenly struck by American Airlines Flight 11, and the whole building began to shake. At first, there wasn't any smoke or fire, and the company told Janelle and her colleagues to remain calm and wait for more information. After an hour of uncertainty, Janelle decided to head for the staircase to make her exit from the building. Once she had descended to the 13th floor, Janelle bent down for a moment to take her shoe off, and then suddenly a wall collapsed on top of her. Her feet were pinned and her head was trapped between 2 pieces of concrete. The only part of her body she was able to move was her left hand. She opened her eyes, but everything was black. She was trapped under the rubble in the dark and totally alone. After 27 long hours of praying for relief from the pain, she heard the voice of a man telling her to remain calm. Janelle had finally been spotted by one of the 300 search and rescue dogs deployed after the disaster, and she was the last living person to be rescued from the wreckage. And to conclude, you might have noticed the total nail biter in the cover image of this episode. It's hard to imagine surviving something like this, but one lucky motorist in Western China is living proof that it can be done. In 2015, the unnamed man was driving to Chongqing when he heard a loud bang come from the opposite lane. Before he had time to process what was happening, he spotted a huge circular blade bouncing through the bushes of the central reservation, which then smashed into the front of his vehicle. Highway police said a truck had crashed in the opposite lane and the saw blade had been thrown off and into the road. The driver may have escaped unharmed, but this 50-centimeter gouge is one scratch that isn't going to come off too easily. I bet your blood pressure's pumping now, right? If you're not quite done getting your fix of adrenaline for the day, why not dive straight back in by checking out one of the previous episodes from this series? Stay safe, everyone, and as always, thanks for listening. Thank you.